Hello, and welcome. Today's course is going to be an introduction into the Navy Education Training 1429 5 Bravo, Navy Hospital Corpsman Non-Resident Training Manual, particularly over Chapter 2, Expeditionary Medical Administration. This course today is brought to you by NavyBMR.com, where we hope to advance your Navy career. NavyBMR.com is an unofficial website and shall not claim nor should it be assumed to be affiliated with the United States government, Department of Defense, or the United States Navy. Information contained herein is unclassified and is for reference and education only and shall not be considered as an official policy or a directive. Now, my name is Steve, and I'm going to be facilitating this course for you today. I have lived and breathed the hospital corpsman life, the instructions, the changes, the policies for 11 years now, both in combat operations with the Marines to include large-scale training exercises, humanitarian efforts in Africa, and many other evolutions throughout my career. Being an instructor in many different disciplines, whether it be TCCC, whether it be CLS, some Marine Corps particular skill sets, I've been fortunate to teach and train thousands of sailors and Marines with hundreds or thousands of hours of curriculum. I have greatly enjoyed my time as an instructor. I have loved my time as a United States Navy sailor, and I hope that this course of instruction will help facilitate any of those needs and clarify anything that you need clarified. I understand that some of these materials, some of these instructions, as you're trying to prepare and try to make yourself better as a sailor, trying to prepare yourself for that next advancement exam, can be pretty frustrating. Some of these instructions are not very fun. Some of them are not very clear. Some of them you don't do a lot in your given billet or you're an NEC, but yet you still get tested on this. And I understand those frustrations. I have tested all the way from E4 to E7, and I completely get it. So what we're going to do is we're going to get into this. We're going to try and make it as much fun. We're going to try to keep a lot of the dry stuff out of it, and we're going to touch right into it. So I highly encourage to everyone have a copy of the Chapter 2. Again, the Expeditionary Medical Administration. It's going to be Chapter 2. All right. I highly encourage you to either have this printed out or follow along in the multimedia device that you're watching this on. Make sure you take notes, and let's get started. So, again, this is brought to you by Navy BMR, where we hope to advance your career. So, Navy Education Training, 1429 5 Bravo, Navy Hospital Corpsman. What are we talking about here? Well, right off the bat, we know we're going to have administration, right? That's right off the bat. We think expeditionary, and we know that real-world operations, we're thinking downrange, whether you're with the Marines, whether you're with the Seabees, maybe you're in direct support with Navy Cargo Handling Battalion. Expeditionary medical facilities, setting up hospitals and shock trauma areas throughout regions of the world, providing humanitarian resources. All of that is awesome, and that's why we joined, to get to go see the world, to get to take care of patients, to do some awesome training. Everything's awesome. But none of this happens without the administrative piece. And you're testing to promote, which means you're one step closer to kind of building up on that admin piece. So what we're going to learn here is a lot of those little building blocks that are going to make you a stronger sailor and a better leader. Because all of this at the end of the day is to also facilitate that knowledge base so that you can help junior sailors along the way. So keep that in mind as you're learning this. Something that I've found that helps me is I try to find someone that doesn't know what I'm learning at that time. And if I teach that to somebody, what I'm able to do is help reinforce that in myself. So keep that in mind as we go through. So we got some instructions right off the bat. And the NAVMED P117, this is your manual for medical department. Essentially, it's the broad overview, or SOP, if you would, of everything medical department related. And so it's very cumbersome. It covers quite a bit of stuff, but that will be an administrative component to what we're going to look at. We have our BUMED instruction 5210, Forms and Reports Management Program. So with that, we're going to kind of touch on a little bit on what kind of reports. Why are these things so important? what makes this important to me, and why should I care? Or, you know what, hey, I'm new to the command, I don't need to know that yet in my career, or I don't need to know that yet, there's somebody else doing it. And our Second Nav Instruction 5216.5, Department of the Navy Correspondence Manual. That is not a fun read. I will not lie to you. It's not fun to read that. But guess what? The way we correspond as the Department of the Navy, regardless of where you're at, formal documentation isn't going away. So make sure you know at least the nomenclature on that. And every once in a while, maybe read a piece of that as we go along. And the last one we're going to touch on right now is the SecNav Instruction 5210.8, Department of the Navy Records Management Program. And so those are the ones we're going to be talking about. And so just make sure you make a note of those and follow along as we go through this. So right off the bat, who does the reporting? Who's in charge of that? Maybe you're the LPO, maybe you're not. Maybe you're new to the command. Maybe you have a gapped leadership billet. No matter what your situation is, right off, first thing you've got to know is, who does the reporting? Well, the answer is the SMDR, the Senior Medical Department Representative. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's a chief. It doesn't mean that it's at least a first class. This can be the senior HM. Maybe it is a chief, depending on your situation. Depending on the scope of your command. If your command is actually across multiple sites and all the sites feed into one headquarters area where that corpsman is actually the SMDR and the rest all fall under him even though they're working remotely, those could be potentially just referred to as MDRs, Medical Department Representatives, because they are not their own command. They're a satellite of that major command. It could be a medical officer, it could be a dental officer, or it could be the IDC. And the reason it specifically says IDC is you got to think they are a provider. They may not be the LPO, they may not be the LCPO, they may not be the SEL, but the IDC is by designation, by authority, by provider status, is the Senior Medical Department Representative in those kind of cases, because they are actually making the calls on the patient care that your sailors or your Marines are going to be receiving at that time. So it's important to note that while we're giving these reports, where do the reports go? How often do I have to send them? Well, every day, all occurrences every day are routed through the officer of the day, the OOD. So whoever's on duty, if your CO designates that he wants it routed directly to him, that's your CO's decision. But the OOD collects everything by designation, right? That's the job of the OOD, is to make sure that he knows what's going on within that command any given day, and make sure that all occurrences or all major events or timelines are being met and reported to the CO on his designated timely briefs. So again, who does the reporting? Our SMDR, our Senior Medical Department Representative, and he's going to the OOD on all occurrences. An occurrence is a death, an injury, changes in someone's status. The reason those are important is, keep in mind, if you're department head for engineering, if you're LPO for a line company out there with the Marines, if you're a senior corpsman with the Seabees, if you're the only corpsman with that Seabees or something, and something changes in that environment, whether you're abroad, whether you're in major training evolution, you're out at sea, whatever the situation is, the CO is going to need to know if his key leadership, if someone of a particular skill set, that there's a limited number of people with those qualifications and those skills, if that person is sick or injured, it limits the operational capabilities in a major way. So keep that in mind. Us as medical professionals, because that's what we are. We are medical professionals in today's Navy. And today's Navy is very dynamic, and it's always changing, and everything's going this way and that way and up and down. Everything that we touch is very, very important. There's very little in our world that does not have a significant impact. So, reporting. Who knows what? Who needs to know it? How do I get it to them? And that's what we're digging into. So, I'm not a yeoman. Why does this documentation matter to me? You may think that you didn't go to school to learn how to write standard Navy letter. You didn't go to school to learn how to write all these different memorandums and, is the letterhead correct? And none of that's fun. Like I said, I'm not here to lie to you. It is not fun to sit there and have to create all these letters. So why is it important? You're not a yeoman. We know that. I know that. I'm not a yeoman or a PS. So why are you having to do that? Well, the reason is because everything we touch is a legal document. It goes in their medical records. It goes in their dental records. It goes in a line of duty injury record. What your job is to make sure that you are medically accounting for everything that the CO is actually saying in his command. What you are saying is that the member is compliant with his medical or dental treatments, or he's non-compliant. Because if someone's getting sicker, if someone's getting more and more ill or more and more injured, or it delays them returning to full duty for an operational standpoint because they're not taking care of themselves, that needs to be documented. Because the CO is going to come to you and ask, why isn't he getting better? Why aren't you taking care of him as well as you should? Why is my operational readiness decreasing because I have more and more people sick? It could get really bad if you think of a large-scale preventive medicine incident, contaminated water or something, and you find out that somebody's not properly treating the water bowls correctly. That is something that needs to be legally documented so that there can be some sort of follow-on. What if there is some sort of follow-on health concerns associated with that? And what those are going to do is also equates to medical documents equaling money. That's what they represent. Medical documentation equates to a fiscal change when they separate or retire. So that is not to say, oh, we need to write everything up for our friends so that we can all get paid, right? Everyone wants to make a little money. Everyone wants to provide for their families. Everybody wants that new truck or that new car or that nice house when they're done with their time in the Navy. But what I mean by that, medical documentation equals money, is the service-connected disabilities, illness and injuries associated with your direct contribution or support of the mission. So if you have a Marine or a sailor who gets an amputation while in Afghanistan or in Iraq or any of these other global regions that we are operating under the global war on terror, for instance, all their medical documentation needs to be very precise. Now, that is obviously a very dramatic event, right? If you lose your legs, of course there's going to be significant documentation and surgeries and everything else. But what about something smaller? What if you get sick while you're over there, breathing in these burn pits? You drink bad water. You eat some bad food. You fall down and you dislocate your shoulder. You're working out and you tear a muscle, right? Working outs, you're still taking care of your body, right? Fitness is part of our Navy culture. So if you don't have this documented correctly, you affect what their fiscal outcome is in their healthcare after they separate, or when something becomes worse and they say, my knee was never like this before I joined the Navy, and now after I've separated a year later, something really bad happens, they can go back and research that. So to touch on it, everything is a legal document. Everything's got a legal history to it. Everything equates to a fiscal amount or a fiscal responsibility, whether it be the member, whether it be the unit, whether it be the Veterans Affairs component once you separate or retire. And as we know, once money gets involved, that's something that that is very important or very significant in that. And then your command integrity. Death, injury, the refusal or the non-compliance, those are all things that as your job as a medical department representative, whether you're the senior medical department representative or just an MDR, your job is to make sure that you are covering all the pieces of responsibility for the CO. The commanding officer is depending on you as a medical professional to make sure everything is documented. So if somebody comes back and says, hey, I didn't get the treatment I needed, Well, actually, you refused. Here's a legal document certified that says we offered it to you and you refused it. Or you know what? We didn't follow through. You were supposed to follow through and you actually didn't do this. So you were non-compliant. Or, hey, you know what? Yep, you're right. It was, we went through and we finished it and you know what? It got worse. We're going to take care of you and so on. That's all part of being a medical professional in today's Navy. So let's talk about these directives. So our directives that we can be given can be permanent or temporary. So what do I mean by a permanent or temporary? Well, a permanent directive is going to be something like your administrative or policy changes, whether in the command, whether in the region, in the fleet, within a community, whether it be an NEC base or anything, your admin or policy changes. Now, we see those all the time in the Navy. It's very fluid. It's very ongoing, up and down, what's what, and nobody likes change. Some people love it. It is what it is. But those are going to be your permanent directives that you may see come down. And so a lot of this stuff, right, from as hospital corpsman, everything for us really kind of originates over at BuMed. So when new medical changes come out, it is imperative that we keep up with our administrative policy changes so that we know that we're taking care of our sailors and our Marines appropriately, as well as delegation of authority. So again, maybe that permanent delegation of authority comes down to sign for certain things, spend money on immunizations, provide a certain level of care outside of the usual scope as a corpsman based on what your medical officer, dental officer is comfortable with or something. Those are kind of your permanent. Your temporary, that's going to be your education, your training, your promotions, everything that kind of falls under that. If your command has been asked for notes or comments, and when I say your command, that's kind of weird. Why would your command be offering up notes and comments? Well, it's not uncommon for a command, even at all the way active duty or reserve, the Veterans Affairs will sometimes reach out. If the member has not separated yet, if they've come off active duty and you've seen them transition to the reserve component, the Navy Operational Support Centers, a NOSC, or a reserve center, as some people just refer to it, the NOSC can get a letter asking them, hey, we need copies of this member's medical records. We realize he's not out yet, but he's requesting treatment or she's requesting treatment from something that occurred while on active duty. But they're still in the Navy, but they're in a reserve status. So that's that kind of that little blurry space, and we can get into that another day. But what's important to know is they send it to the command. And so the command, even though it's coming from you, this is where making sure that your Navy correspondence, that you're following that Navy correspondence manual very closely. Because everything that you're submitting in that particular case, or in any case, is going to be a reflection of your commanding officer, and which is then going to reflect down on you. So you want to make sure you're keeping this stuff tight. Now, your sick call reporting. We've all seen these. Everyone's seen your green monsters. And you go and you keep a big one or a small one. You may keep this in your pocket or your bag if you're going to be mobile. If you set up on your front desk, it's not uncommon. You'll have it open and every day is a different page. And they just scroll through and your people sit there and you don't even look at them. Hey, log in the book. You got the lines all marked out. Name and rank, reason you're here, date they are, the time they reported. That's not uncommon. We've all seen those. But that is not a formal sick call logbook. That may be used for, and you may use it all year and mark them out by FY and keep them on hand. However, what we're going to be kind of looking at is our SAMS system. And we're going to talk about SAMS and a little bit more and what else they can record in it. But all your actual sick call reporting is going to be logged into SAMS digitally. So that is in there. No matter what, you can log in, you can track it, your CO can get his updates. But your informal is going to be this logbook. You might hear me say it's a green monster. So these logbooks, great and they're awesome, but this is going to be your more informal, your SAMS system. That, as most of you know, is going to be your formal reporting system for all of your sick call. And that's going to be your guys coming in, I got the sniffles, my back hurts, I slept on it wrong. and everything else. It's also important to remember when you're going through this is your sick calls get reported daily. So who gets that? The commanding officer. If he delegates that down and says, hey, I need you to also report that to my OOD, then that's going to be up to his discretion. But your commanding officer gets daily briefs on all the sick call. So just to run through this real quick, we've talked about your SMDR and the reporting. We talked about why, even though you're not a yeoman, why this is the most appropriate, why this is so important, and why the most appropriate thing for you to do is actually become a subject matter expert on certain levels of documentation. Why are they important, and where are they going? What are some of the instructions that we're going to be kind of thinking about as we go through this, and our sick call and our directives? So take a moment, look over all of your pages that we've covered so far in the instruction, highlight any notes. If you need to take a moment and go back and re-listen to a piece, if you want to read a paragraph or a page real quick to give yourself a better perspective, please go ahead and do that now. We're going to take a quick moment, and we're going to come right back, and we're going to continue on. Welcome back. So, we've covered down on everything. Hopefully you've looked through a lot of your notes, made sure everything was clear. If you need further clarification on any of that previous stuff, you can always go back and look at that later. So moving on to the further piece of our instruction, we've talked about SAMS a little bit. SAMS is one of those medical administration tools that to track unit level readiness for all of our operational components, whether Navy or Marine Corps. So some of the things that SAMS is capable is those of you that have access, I encourage you to pull those junior sailors in, pull those corpsmen in and show them, educate them on it. Let them play with it so maybe they get a better grip on it or a better understanding of the actual intricacies and how in-depth this system works. But SAMS is going to be used, that's going to be tracking our inventory, right? That's important because, again, what we already talked about was the moment something affects money, as soon as it has a fiscal amount tied to it that we are responsible for, it becomes a priority at the command level. Because everything trickles down, you waste money, fraud, waste, and abuse. You don't want to be that guy. Everyone knows that, that's been in the Navy longer than 5 minutes. So that's going to track our medical inventory, our PrevMed inspection. So from a PMT standpoint, you're going to be able to go in there and you can kind of monitor what the inspection situation looks like for a given region or a command. You can update your profiles accordingly, or the files for those sites accordingly. It's going to report and receive the radiation exposure data. Now, hopefully we don't have a whole lot of that, but again, if that does happen from a health standpoint, right, everything that we do as a healthcare professional, we want to make sure this stuff is documented appropriately. So SAMS, that's going to be your radiation spot, all right, and all of our medical training. So we all know about 3500s, we all know about fleet temps, all those other systems, but SAMS has a different set of programming that we can put a lot of our medical training in there and follow through on continuing education, internal department developmental stuff, and so that's something. So again, SAMS, our inventory, PrevMed, radiation, medical training, and it also helps keep those numbers. It helps us monitor those operational units, those components, and make sure that we are ready to deploy downrange at a moment's notice. So another one that a lot of sailors maybe refer to be familiar with is MERS. All right, now MERS, I think almost every corpsman, I believe every corpsman should have MERS access. Again, sailors, if you got a corpsman that doesn't have access, you do log in. It's only going to help sync this kind of stuff into you. But again, that's a medical and dental administrative tool that we can use all the way at the command level, all the way up to major regions and fleets and forces, large-scale commands, depending on the scope of what you are responsible for, MDR, SMDR, and so on. That's going to be able to allow you to monitor that. You can make those command changes in someone's record if you're giving them the immunization, right? Flu shots every year, perfect example. PHAs, dental, every year, you got to get them. So that's going to be where you're logging in and you're able to update their status digitally, and it's a digital medical record of sorts. So it's also going to allow you to do your command tracking. So you may hear terms like hit list. So your CO may want a hit list, or your CMC, or your first sergeant, you know, for the Marines or for your sailors. And he's going to be like, where are we at medically? I need a hit list so I know what departments, what divisions, what sites need to come see you and make sure that they are fully medically ready and dentally ready to deploy downrange. They're also able to pull that reports and that history. History, what I'm referring to, is your IMR, your individual medical report or readiness. And so that's what I refer to as that. So we're going to get into the IMR stuff a little bit in just a little bit. So looking forward here, so we got talking a little bit about our SSICs. So our standard subject identification codes. So we've talked a little bit about the SSIC in terms of our instructions that we referred to on the first one. And so going through the SSIC 13 major groups, a 6000 series, for instance, is going to be that medical. It breaks down to 6000 and 6000 and. If you got a 1000 and, you're talking about your administrative. So I encourage you to just look over all 13 of those components, those major groups of your SSICs, and just be familiar, not necessarily with all the minute ones, but when you're thinking of your advancement exam purposes, right? Because that's what we're here for. At least get an overview where you know what each of the series represents of those 13. That's going to help you be successful. That's going to be in your SecNav instruction 5210.11. Your SecNav instruction 5210.11. That's going to tell you everything you need to know on the SSICs. So all those are going to be put into binders. We know that. So here's our binder. We got a big, thick command binder. It's going to be full of all your SSICs. We know that we're going to want to put them in order by series for easier tracking and accountability. And so we want to just leave these out if we need to be able to track them and get them accounted for, and that's not going to be a problem. However, some SSIC material may be classified. Some of you work within the a command and provide medical support for something that maybe have classified capabilities, classified features in nature. So our SSIC stuff, we're not going to just put that in a regular binder, right? So it's important to note that we're going to be separating those in a different binder, and that's going to be in accordance with, all right, because that's going to be a separate instruction. So here we go, taking those little tiny notes, those little differences that you can also help bring back to your command, is that SecNav Mike Tech 5510.36. SecNav M 5510.36. So that is going to be how we separate our classified, how we separate our classified SSIC material from your regular material. Now you'll also hear, this is where it's going to get a little confusing. So in chapter 2, you're going to see when you look through here, it says, what does classifying refer to? So classified and classifying, there's a distinction there. So if it's a classified, that is the classic Department of the Navy or military, this is classified, and if you don't have the clearance, you're not going to have the access to it. However, when we are classifying an SSIC, it's important to know that you're not making it a classified document. Classifying is referring to where does it fall within the SSIC scope. So you may write one. Is it administrative? Is it medical? Some of them are pretty close. So you're dealing with operational readiness. What if someone gets hurt during PT or something? Or what if someone just got ill and it's affecting something else? So what you have to remember is classifying an SSIC is simply the decision-making process to determine where it's going to fall within the SSIC codes. So that's where we're at with the SSICs. I don't think I clarified this, and I apologize. If you're unsure what the SSIC is, you want to make sure you have all 13 major groups down in terms of just the broad overview of what they're covering, but that's going to be on your official Navy documentation. It's going to be up there in that top corner, that top right corner, and you're going to see those that little 4,000, 6,000 code and that series up there with the date and everything. And it's going to tell you exactly how this is going to be associated with your command or what it's going to be covering. If that was unclear, I apologize. So now we've talked a little bit about the history and pulling those reports, right? And I said what the MERS is going to be really associated with the IMR, that is individual medical records or the readiness reporting. So your IMR, it's important to know that when you're pulling that, it's like a one sheet, boom, right there. It's an overview of everything. I call them showstoppers. So you're talking about your eyewear. So do they have their gas mask inserts? Do they have ballistic eyewear? If they're going on an IA downrange, it's important to know if they have those, if they need an updated prescription, and when was their last eye exam associated with that. Their immunizations in their labs. Have they gotten all the immunizations they need for their yearly updates, for their boosters, anything like that? Are they going to a different region in the world? If you're going to Japan, you have to get yellow fever. If you're going to be going to Africa, or EURCOM, AFRICOM, CENTCOM, those are going to have different requirements immunization-wise. Think about your smallpox, those of you that have that little cigarette burn on your arm from that. Anthrax, no one likes getting that. That thing burns, and guess what? You got to get six of them. Have fun with that. Labs, think about what's a big showstopper. We're talking about HIV. Every 2 years, everyone's getting drawn for their HIV. Think about your G6PD. Your sickle cell labs, making sure that you have those on file. Having your DNA drawn and having that on file. A lot of that stuff is done early on in your career in boot camp or in A school. But again, everything changes, right? Maybe something falls through the crack. Maybe something's not put into MERS. It's not uncommon also to have some kids come straight through all their training and something is not put into MERS while you're at boot camp or while they're at the schoolhouse. So when you have somebody new check in, whether it be a sailor or a Marine, it's important to make sure you're checking their IMR and against their medical record or their dental record. And make sure everything reflects appropriately so that you're giving your commanding officer the best information available. So now we're going down deployment limiting conditions. Maybe they have a new medical condition. Maybe they've got an injury. If they've got some sort of injury off duty, if they got an injury on duty, that's going to be associating their medical or dental readiness to and how it's going to affect their deployability. PHA. Now, PHAs are awesome for a couple different reasons. Everyone gets frustrated because you know you have to do it every year, and everyone hears it as a corpsman, every Marine, every sailor. They all say the same thing. I'm pretty sure I got my flu shot just like last drill, or I got it last month or last quarter. I just got my PHA last month. Everyone always says that. And they don't really realize the scope or how important that is. And it's our job to make sure maybe they did. Maybe you didn't put it in right. Maybe somebody else didn't put it in right. We want to make sure all of our stuff is being reported appropriately. But what a PHA is great for is it gives you that time to engage your sailor, to engage that Marine, and find out what's going on with them medically. Find out what's going on with them dentally. Have they started smoking? And that was that wasn't the case last year. Have they increased their drinking? Have they started having that knee pain from that deployment 3 years ago? And all of a sudden, their new workout regiment is starting to affect that or something. These are awesome opportunities for you to be able to engage all of your sailors, people to kind of think about. We don't really associate too much about is our leadership and how they're always in meetings and everything else, like your commanding officer and your XO, your CMC, your chief. Everyone's always busy running around and they're trying to keep everything going for the command, and we rely on this small unit leadership to take care of that. But also make sure that you're pulling your leadership down as well. Make sure you're checking on all these guys. PHAs are a phenomenal tool for that, and that's what they're designed for. But if you don't do them right, you're going to miss that opportunity. And the last piece is dental. And nobody likes going to the dentist. Going to the dentist isn't fun, but it's one of those things that we have to do. So our IMRs is going to be your eyewear, your immunizations, your labs, deployment limiting conditions, PHAs, and dental. those are going to be what we're going to refer to as your showstoppers. Because if you don't have those done, if they're not done correctly, if you're not taking care of them, if they're not taking care of themselves, and there's no formal communication, there's no appropriate documentation, things are going to fall apart and your CO is going to have be asking you, why is his operational readiness decreasing? So last piece on this, going back, right? Talked about one of the showstoppers is dental. So with dental, we have our four classifications. Our class one, everything's good. Green, awesome, ready to deploy, no issues, and no minor concerns that they will believe will eventually become an issue. So if you're a class one dental, you're good to go. Our class two dentals, as we know, hey, you're good to deploy. However, there is something in there. Maybe you need a cleaning. Maybe you've got some early signs of some yuck mouth. Well, it could eventually maybe turn into something. Maybe it won't, but at least for the right now, for the next 12 months, we're not going to foresee any dental emergencies from any of this, any of the evidence that we see in your mouth today. You're good to go. So now we're getting into the red, right? So we got our two green lights. We're going to go into our two red lights. Dental class three, you're a yuck mouth. So you got cavities. You've got your teeth are screwed up because you got to get your wisdom teeth pulled. Whatever it is, maybe you need a root canal. The point is, you're not deploying. So now your dental readiness has affected your operational readiness or your command's operational readiness. So it's important to make sure that we're counseling these Marines, counseling these sailors, staying on top of them, using that appropriate documentation, making sure that they are feeding us information monthly, weekly, whenever they get their appointments, and we're getting these sailors and these Marines taken care of. So a dental class three, they have an issue in their mouth that is expected, okay? That's the key. So when you're thinking about exam stuff, that first part, that dental class two, I said, we don't have anything that we expect to become an issue in 12 months. That's our magic number. So now with our class threes, we expect some emergency, some sort of issue is occurring within 12 months. So they may say, I don't have any pain in my teeth. Well, it's bad enough where within the next year, if this does not go untreated, you are going to have a dental emergency. So why is that? You're like, well, that's silly. If he doesn't have pain, let's get him deployed. Well, to help this connect in your head a little bit, hey, you're going to be like, well, he doesn't have any pain. We're going to send him out the door and he's going to deploy. Well, how that becomes an issue is in 6 months, now you're downrange. Maybe you're an IA in Iraq or in Afghanistan. You're on a ship or you're in a submarine and you're in an area that you can't sit there and take an operational pause because of the region that you're in. And now you have a dental emergency. Now you have affected your operational readiness. Now you have limited your ability to support the Navy and its assigned missions. So that's a little bit of why we have to think the way we have to think when in terms of making these decisions. And our dental class four. Dental class four simply means we don't know. Their dental exam has expired, so they need a new one. So they automatically, because of the unknown, they go into the red status. They can go from a four to a one just like that. Maybe they were a one before, but if they don't get it in time, they're going to drop to a four. So you see that? That's the unknown. We just don't know. So just to recap this stuff right now, we talked about our SAMs, we talked about MERS. Those are two great administrative tools for tracking, whether it's going to be all of your unique preventive medicine and your radiation, your inventory stuff, all the way to the individual medical components for our sailors and for our Marines and how we can affect those. We talked about our SSIC codes and how we want to make sure those are appropriately documented and kind of going back to that, hey, I'm not a yeoman, why should I know this? We talked about the breakdown of our IMR. So we know what we're looking at. What are our showstoppers? What are we considering? And our dental. What are the timelines? What is a dental class 3? What is a dental class 2? And so take a moment, look over your instruction, look over your notes. Please follow up and re-watch what you need to re-watch. Please reread, highlight, write. I want you to make sure you're utilizing all these resources. And take a pause right here. Come back. We're going to finish up this instruction. All right, welcome back. So moving on to the last piece of this instruction. So another big piece of this proponent is the 8404 community, which is the Fleet Marine Force. Now, this is something I personally have spent my entire career within this community, within the Navy. For 11 years now, I've been within the Fleet Marine Force. So what we're going to do is break this down for those of you that may not be familiar with that or have a full grasp. Maybe you're new to it or something. So the way the Fleet Marine Force structure works is broken down into really four components. So you got your headquarters, right? That's going to be plain and simple, like any other large-scale command. It's going to be your flag officers, a lot of O6s, and then all the major components that make up of a headquarters element. So headquarters of Marine Corps, headquarters of the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, or 4th Marine divisions, wings, or groups. Those are the other components. So you have your division. This is going to be your classic Marine Corps infantrymen kind of warfighting component of the Marine Corps. Combat-oriented in nature, not a combat support, but a combat element. So division. You have corpsmen within there. Those are going to be your first line corpsmen. You'll also hear them referred to as a line corpsman. So that's when you think of that, combat personnel, division. Now your combat support, everything revolves around whether you're in the Navy or whether you're with the Marine Corps, everything around supporting the combat mission. So when we're talking about the Fleet Marine Force, the Air Wing and the group, the Marine Logistics Group, as you'll hear it, what it's formally called, those are the two support assets of the division. So the wing provides all the aviation support, whether it be transportation, whether it be fire support, whether it be airdrops, whatever it may be, any of that, even surveillance, reconnaissance surveillance flights. The Air Wing provides that. The next piece, Marine Logistics Groups. So this is going to be all your fuel, your major motor vehicle transportation components, all of your basic warehouse logistics, your forward deployed logistics. And within there, we have a huge, huge medical piece. So we have our first line guys, your line corpsmen that are there at the point of injury. Boom, IED goes off. Your division corpsman is the one running up and grabbing him, dragging him off, and taking him off to treat him. But in MLG, it's a wide variety mix. It's a mix of functional assets that provide combat service support beyond the capabilities of the organic command. So what does that mean? That's a lot of really cool language. It makes it sound fancy. But what is that? So Marine Logistics Group, those are going to be your medical assets within there. And it's going to have your multi-purpose surgeons and your specialists and your anesthesia, your nurses. It's going to have a lot of corpsmen with a wide variety of NECs, your x-ray techs and every other component that you would think of in an ER and an ICU and an OR, your surge techs and everything. So they come together and they can be placed in strategic places around an area of operations or a country and provide that support for casualties and humanitarian assistance and what other operations may be needed or functions may be needed for that given region or assignment that they've been tasked with. So again, you get your headquarters, your division. Those are your combat personnel. Your combat personnel are in division, which means your combat support personnel are in the wing, headquarters, and group. Some people forget that headquarters is assigning the missions, but they also assign tasks to support the mission, which is ultimately that. So this little diagram here, some people may need to see a visual. Your headquarters controls everything, right? So we got this. And it branches out as an umbrella for everything. Division right here is the main goal. They're coming straight down to the mission. That's their primary tasking. To the left and to the right, we got the wing and the group. And they are feeding everything into the division so that they can accomplish their mission. So that's just kind of another visual, for instance, for those of you that may need to just see that. For division, you'll have what's called a battalion aid station. A battalion is a smaller component within a division. And a battalion has roughly 2 medical officers and 65 corpsmen. And they will be spread out over the different companies. And your battalion aid station, that's where your 2 physicians will be. We refer to them as battalion surgeons. And you will have what is your BAS personnel within that infantry battalion. So they are setting up that forward-placed medical aid station, in a sense. That's what a battalion aid station is, a BAS. And so you'll get them off the line at the point of injury. Boom, Lance Corporal gets blown up. HM3 runs over and grabs him, drags him off, starts working him. They get the CASEVAC, or maybe they ground evac him, and they report. The first place they may go is this BAS, because that will be a launching off point to MLG, where you will have further echelons of care, or as we get into our like fleet hospitals and everything, which we're about to touch on. But the reason we like BASs is they're forward deployed, they're very mobile, and it's usually something that it can be worked out of a very minuscule or very, very unusual circumstances. You can run this out of the back of a large vehicle. You can run this out of a small structure. You can run it under a tent. You don't need a lot of resources to actually function as a BAS. And so that is a little bit on the Fleet Marine Force component of what we do as corpsmen, and the breakdown of what kind of things you could be considering in terms of the expeditionary and medical administration piece. So coming over here to the last like operational major component. So we have fleet hospitals. These are going to be what you're thinking of as like your EMF guys. You're a blue side medical expeditionary personnel. So if you're a reservist, you've seen these at your NOSCs. Almost every NOSC has at least one det of your EMF, Great Lakes, Dallas, Camp Pendleton, or Bethesda. If you're active duty, you've seen some of them around. Camp Pendleton has a large expeditionary medical facility there for the blue side. San Diego has some training facilities and everything. But the idea is for a combat support and low intensity scenario support. So it could be anything, again, from that humanitarian assignment all the way to supporting the global war on terror, direct support of the casualties being brought out of those environments. These are not going to be as mobile as what we were talking about with the BAS, but what we're thinking of is like 60 days plus, a little bit more rigid structures. They may have be using the environment, like the local structures around them. They may be bringing some out, but they're not going to be as mobile as the BAS, so it will take a while. The mission is going to depend on the COCOM. So what do I mean by COCOM? That's going to be your combatant command. So if you're unfamiliar with those, that's CENTCOM, AFRICOM, EURCOM, SOUTHCOM, NORTHCOM. So large scale, large area of operations. So the reason for that is because where we're going to stick these fleet hospitals, where these EMF personnel and everything go, they're usually supporting more than their immediate surrounding areas. So going back, BAS. BAS is not going to be a major structure or a major foundation of medical support for a large region. It's going to be there for that specific battalion in that specific stretch, region, or area of operations that they're functioning in. But you go into here where you're looking at 60-day plus operations, it's going to be a large plus up of personnel and resources and the availability to and asset support, in organic or inorganic, coming in and out. And so the COCOM can assign them, let's say in the Horn of Africa, and they may be assigned to cover the medevacs for 3 or 4 of the surrounding countries. So anything going on in almost that region, they may be the only show in town. And so that's how you got to kind of think about it. When you start thinking about the differences and you start getting confused as to how big the scale is or what we're kind of considering, hospitals, fleet hospitals, I mean, think about anything in town. You drive across city to get to a good hospital. Same thing here. You may be flying over two countries to get to a hospital. You're not going to travel that far to get to a battalion aid station. So that's kind of the idea behind that, and that's a good reason why the COCOM gets involved, and they will decide what kind of scope or how large of a footprint they want to leave there, or an impact in the region, to best support the overall mission that the Pentagon has sent down to that combatant commander. So the last major piece of operational forces that we're going to see corpsmen in is going to be the Seabees. Those guys are really proud. They're great at what they do. And a lot of the same structure, very, very similar structure, is going to kind of be in that same ballpark as the FMF. And what I mean by that is they're broken down into battalions as well. There's 8 total battalions, so 8 CB battalions. But unlike some commands don't have organic corpsmen to them. And with the Seabees, they do. They're not going to have as many as the Fleet Marine Force will, by and large, but they actually do have billets structure set up where the corpsmen are actually a part of a team, and they can create their own BAS-like situation to function out of. The similarities are so close, there's no real noticeable difference in terms of the Chapter 2 Expeditionary Medical Administration component. So you're going to see that as the same. So the biggest takeaway from that is similar FMF structure in the sense that they have the organic corpsmen to them, and there's 8 battalions total. So that's going to wrap up our NAVED 1429-5 Bravo. All right, so this was over the hospital corpsmen information for the Expeditionary Medical Administration. Again, make sure you're taking good notes, make sure you're highlighting, and the best way, a little tip, when you're studying and everything else, you guys are really busy. I realize that. And whether you're trying to get new PQSs signed off for your work center, whether you're trying to get a warfare program completed, what you got to do is just carve out a little bit of time for a little bit of everything. When you teach someone else, it's going to help reinforce those things. It also gives you that connection with your junior sailors, so I highly encourage you to do that. So make sure you take all your notes appropriately. Please rewind, watch another piece of this. I like to break it up so that you guys can take a moment to make sure you get all your notes done. But this will conclude the Expeditionary Medical Education section, Chapter 2 of the NAVED Train 1429-5 Bravo. We sincerely hope that it helps you to advance in your career. Visit us at NavyBMR.com to test your knowledge online, as well as access some of our advancement exam resources, such as your BIBS for free, resource library, physical and digital study guides, and more video training and audio files. Practice quizzes and other mock advancement exams are available at your discretion. So we hope you enjoyed. Again, my name is Steve, and thank you for joining us.